Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the premier radio networks, including 180 of the best stations in the U.S. of A., on Sunday, September 23rd, 2012. This is episode 912. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by RingCentral. I love my cloud-based phone system from RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is just $20 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphone. Find out what your gadget's worth and get cash to upgrade to the latest iPhone at gazelle.com. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here. The Tech Guy Show is on the air, episode 912, in a continuing quest to uncover the best and the worst technologies on the market. Hey, how are you? Good. I hope you're having a good day today. We're going to talk about computers, of course, today, the internet. We'll talk about home theater, digital photography with our photo expert, Chris Marquardt, and of course, we're going to talk phones, cell phones, mobile phones, because the iPhone 5 came out. And it's interesting to watch as people get their iPhone 5 and they start talking about it. They start talking about the pros and the cons. I spent a long time yesterday talking about the iPhone 5. And so I don't know if I don't want to rehash everything, but I think for those who did not hear yesterday's show, and I know that's a lot of you, there's a few things to say. First of all, I got one right here. I ordered it from Verizon Friday morning, a week ago Friday morning, because, and I think if you didn't order it then, you probably didn't get it on the 21st, a couple of days ago, because they sold out on the Apple Store. They sold out in an hour from midnight to 1 a.m. on Friday the 14th. And then if you didn't make it then, and I did not get up, I should have probably, given my responsibility to you, I should have gotten up and ordered one, but I didn't. I woke up in the morning, and because I didn't expect that, frankly. I thought, oh, there'll still be plenty. And so I went to a Verizon's website, and they had the 16 and the 32s left. They didn't have any 64s left. The most popular sold out, I guess. So I ordered one, and I did get it on Friday, and I've been using it ever since. And this is what I usually do when I'm trying to get a sense of a new phone, is forsake all others. It's not easy either, let me tell you. I was using the Samsung Galaxy S3 prior to this. Bigger screen, more resolution, almost as much dots per inch, almost as many dots per inch. The iPhone 5 screen is beautiful. I mean, it really is. It's a gorgeous screen. According to PC Magazine and AnandTech, where they've been doing the benchmarks furiously for the last couple of days, this is now the fastest phone you can buy. I don't know if that makes any difference. I think we've gotten to the point, this happened to computers, not quite so fast, but we got to the point where they were fast enough and it didn't really matter if one was faster than the other. If it's fast enough to do what you need to do, that's fast enough, right? So it is the fastest phone ever, but I can't, you know, I haven't noticed. It's not like I've been using it going, wow, holy smokes, this thing. No, it's, you know, it's a phone. Or it's, well, it's a small computer that can be a phone if you need it to be. The Apple claims it's the thinnest phone ever, certainly the thinnest iPhone. There may be thinner phones, but it is thin. Some say, you know, I expected it to feel lighter in the hand. It's fairly light, but It's also fairly dense because it's not a huge screen. It's a weird screen. It's a 4-inch screen, but it's not a 4-inch screen like any other. It's tall. It's 16:9, so it's kind of a widescreen format. And what that means is if you use apps that aren't designed for the iPhone 5, they won't go all the way to the edge. All of Apple's will. But some of the apps that I use have, I guess, black bars on them at the top and the bottom because they can't go all the way to the edge. But, you know, it's funny because this phone is really only one icon row taller. It's the same width as the old iPhone. It's only one icon row taller. So it's only 176 pixels tall or something like that. So, yeah, you get a little bit of a black bar at the top and the bottom, but you don't really notice it. I guess with the white iPhone, you might notice it. The bar on the black bars on the top and the bottom are the size of the notification window, roughly. And on a black iPhone, you can't really you don't really notice it. So that's nice. It doesn't bug me anyway. On the other hand, I'm not going crazy about the extra screen real estate. It's not overwhelmingly huge. So I don't know exactly. And most of the apps, by the way, will be adjusted. Where you'll get a benefit is things like games and movies and TV shows that will use the 16:9 aspect ratio. So whereas you might have gotten black bars in the old iPhone, when you watched a movie, you won't anymore. It'll fill the screen just right. Nice screen. Fast phone. And the one other feature that's pretty cool that if you have an iPhone 4S you might crave, it has LTE. So if you're on Verizon, AT&T, and to a lesser degree Sprint, and you're in an LTE market. I say a lesser degree because Sprint's only in a few markets with LTE. You'll notice a huge difference in speed. In fact, I did a speed test. I should do another one as people get their iPhones and activate them. I wonder if this will start to slow down. But when you do a speed test on this thing, it's pretty remarkable. My LTE speed yesterday was almost 20 megabits down and almost 15 megabits up. 15 up. So that's faster than my home service, not in the down so much, but in the up for sure by a landslide. That is the one and only feature, if you ask me, that makes this worth buying. So to answer the question, I think the most common question will be, well, I have an iPhone 4S. Should I upgrade? No, because you'll be paying full price unless you want the LTE. If LTE is really important to you, then it's worth it. If you have an iPhone 4 and you're ready to get the subsidized upgrade, it's probably worth it. And certainly from any earlier iPhone, it's worth it. So my general advice, and you should go play with it and see, but just the extra screen row and the LTE are the difference. If that's, you know, yes, it's faster, but you can't tell. Yes, the screen's a little bit better, but you can't tell. The camera's got panorama mode built in. That, you know, you can't, and it's nice. It's a good camera. It's not spectacularly better than the 4S. So I'd say not necessarily worth an upgrade if you're on a 4S, especially since you'll probably be paying the full freight, which is anywhere from $600 to $900 for your upgrade. That's a lot of money. I don't think it's worth it. Now, the next question is, if you're an Android user or you're thinking about a new phone and you're just trying to decide Android or iPhone, and that one's more personal. You know, I think I love the Galaxy S3. I like a bigger screen. I have fat fingers, so I like a bigger keyboard. You don't get that on the iPhone unless you type sideways, I guess. It's still hard to type on the iPhone screen, I find. I hate the iPhone keyboard. So if you want a bigger screen, and there are other choices. The Galaxy S3, yes, but soon the Galaxy Note 2 will be on Verizon and AT&T, and that's a 5.5-inch screen. If you want Android's capabilities, and there are some things Android can do that an iPhone will not do. It's not that it can't. Apple won't let it. Chief among which is the Google Maps app. Google Maps is great. It's been eliminated on the new iPhone, and you'll hear and have been hearing a lot of complaints about Apple's replacement. Look, it's hard to get in the map business. Google's been doing it for years. Google recently said we have 400 years of map experience. I don't know how that helps, but they say they have 400 years of map experience. Lots of complaints about the Apple Maps, especially in less mapped areas, you know, rural France or the Falkland Islands. But, you know, if you're living in a metro, it's fine. But I haven't had a chance to test it much, but it's not horrible. And the good news is there are plenty of third-party maps, including soon, I expect, Google Maps on the iPhone 5. So you will be sacrificing. That Google Maps is gone. And Apple's replaced it with a somewhat less spectacular mapping program. But who cares? There's, you know, there's Jeep, there's TomTom itself. There's GPS Drive from MotionX. That's an excellent GPS. There's plenty of good choices. And soon, I'm sure, Google, you know, the rumor is Google submitted a Google Maps app to the Apple Store, and Apple just has to approve it. So soon, I'm sure you'll be able to replace the Apple Maps program. It's, as far as I'm concerned, you know, it's okay. It's, I never used the Google Maps for navigation. I used MotionX GPS Drive, which I like a lot. So there you go. If you're not an if you're choosing between Android or iPhone, or maybe even the new Windows 8 phones, which will be out next month or I guess November, they're beautiful too. I'd say that's a very personal decision you should try before you buy. The iPhone 5 is just another phone. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. Didn't say that, did I? That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Do you have an iPhone 5 or you want to tell me why it's the best phone on the market? I don't think it is. I don't think it's even in close in some respects. 8888, ask Leo. It might be the best phone for you. Remember, that's all that matters. It doesn't matter what's best on the market. That's a silly criterion. What's the best phone for you? And that you have to judge on a variety of things. For instance, if you have invested thousands and thousands of dollars in iPhone apps, there's some incentive to stick with the iPhone. Fortunately, apps aren't that expensive. I don't think that's too much of a burden. Best is subjective, isn't it? And in this case, it's getting more and more subjective. I think there was no question in 2007 when the first iPhone came out that I waited 6 hours in line, and it really was far superior to anything out there on the market and was for a couple of years. I brought out some old stuff. I have the old, I'm looking at my old first Android phone. This is the HTC G1, the very first Android phone. Horrible. And that was 1 or 2 years after the iPhone came out? I was very interested in what Google was going to do. Couldn't compete. So I continued to use the iPhone right up until the Galaxy S2 came out. And that one kind of won me over, I have to say. That was the first Android phone that I used full time, putting aside the iPhone. And I'll use the iPhone 5 now for a while. It's pretty. Look, it's beautiful. In fact, I got the black one, and it feels like a fine Swiss watch. It's beautiful. It's elegant. It's become style, isn't it? It's more about style now than it is about substance. 8888, ask Leo. That's the question. If you have a the phone number if you have a question or a comment or a suggestion. And we could talk about anything. We don't have to talk about iPhone. We talk about the Kindle Fire, too. I keep meaning to talk about that, the new Fire HD, and who that's for. I'll give you the thumbnail review. For most people, the similarly priced $200 Nexus 7 from Google is a better choice. The Kindle Fire HD is only good for somebody who really wants to live in the Amazon world. Or somebody who needs something really, really simple just for reading and consuming media. Because that's all it can do. It's nice. It's fine. It's $200. But if it's a 7-inch tablet you're in the market for, you might look at the Nexus 7 from Google. I think that's a better tablet. It's a full Android tablet. Or wait and see what Apple does. Supposedly, a 7.85-inch iPad will be out. And I think it's true next month in October. To the phones we go, starting with Scott, Valencia, California. Hello, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Sir, how are you?
I am well. How are you?
I am good. Good morning. I am calling from Valencia, California, and I work at Valencia Acura. My management was nice enough to give me some time to talk to you.
All right. Well, they got a plug, so it's a fair trade.
Oh, well, thank you.
Are you dealing this afternoon at Valencia Acura?
Sir, we are always dealing. Family-run place, and it's one of the last mom-and-pop shops out there, and it's just a wonderful environment here.
I do like that. I think that's great. I think it's nice to see. You know, family-run is good. Well, what can I do for you?
I wanted to fill you in on a little background. For the last 20 years, I've been doing appearances as the foremost lookalike in the country for James Dean.
You look like James Dean?
Yes, sir, and finally I've written my first book, and it took me 10 years.
Wait a minute, but now you're 20 years older. Do you look like a 40-year-old James Dean?
Right now, I look like a 55-year-old James Dean.
Good, because we never found out what he looked like at 55. Do you have a website?
Yes, sir. You can look me up if you want. Just Google Scott Brimajohn, and you'll see some of my work. But my concern is that my book has been published on the Amazon Kindle.
Yeah.
I am so computer illiterate that my 13-year-old daughter, Jillian, is helping me to format the photographs that go into the file.
Yeah.
It's a 24 to 48-hour tech support turnaround for me to be able to get them to come back and respond as to whether or not they're in the space they should be in. And we still haven't done it right. So far, she's turned it into a JPEG file, and she's turned it into a PDF file. But what they're telling me is, I wondered, should I forward this email to you, or can I read it to you, sir?
No, don't read it to me. I don't have time. I'll tell you what you need to do. Amazon's book format is neither PDF. See, the problem is you're not going to see what it's going to look like on a Kindle if you keep doing it in PDF. So what you need to do is do it in the Amazon Kindle format, and their format, the new Kindle format 8. And you need a device or probably a software program that's going to give you WYSIWYG, right? Remember the old days when we had WYSIWYG word processors. We finally could actually see the layout on the screen. It took computers of a certain amount of power before we just had to imagine it. We'd use dot commands. Remember that to format it. So the new Kindle format 8. I think you could probably use Mobi. You want a program that will work in that format. So that you can see on the computer screen exactly what it's going to look like. Now, I have to tell you, this must be hard because I have a book of chess problems that for the first, there's 600 chess problems in this book. It's by Raymond Cheng. The first 459 are unusable on the Kindle because they're about the size of a dime. I can't read them, the diagrams. And then all of a sudden, they're fine. And I have emailed, and Amazon even says on the on the page, oh, we fixed it. Mm-mm. So if Amazon can't do, I don't know what the problem is. So what we need is something that can edit Kindle format files. And let me just see if I can find you something. Because that's going to be the best choice for you. So you get a WYSIWYG editor. And I know there are some because... I have talked with my friends who are making Kindle books. You know what we should ask is Brian Brushwood, who made an amazing... Oh, I guess he did his book on a variety of formats, didn't he? Boy, I'm looking, and I don't see anything. How about you in the chat room? Is there anything... Here's a link to a page from Instructables.com. We'll put this in the show notes on how to format something for the Kindle. Oh, yeah, he used Vook, didn't he? That's right. Vook, VOOK.com. This is an interesting publishing service. It's more than software. Because when you use Vook, you can publish it in a variety of different formats, including the Kindle format. And you'll get the layout right. So that's one. And then the one that our friend Andy Inako recommended, thank you for the chat room recommendation, our Bitman, is called Calibre. C-A-L-I-B-R-E, caliber-ebook.com. We'll put both of these in the show notes. So this is a program that lets you take your starting point, which is probably, a Microsoft Office file or something like that, and then format it in a way that it's going to work on the Kindle. And I think you want to obviously preview it before you submit it, because as you said, there's a 48-hour turnaround. It's not instant. So I would say Calibre is certainly one choice. And then if you want to publish to multiple platforms, Kindle, Apple, Nook, then Vook, VOOK.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chat room to the rescue. We mentioned a couple of ways that you can format Kindle docs or docs for the Kindle if you're going to sell on Amazon store. But Amazon themselves has a great solution, too. Thank you to the chat room for recommending it. If you Google Amazon's Kindle Direct Publishing, KDP Tools and Resources, you'll see that they have a couple of programs that will really make a difference for you. The Kindle Gen program will take a variety of files and make them in Kindle format, but then you want to preview it, and this is the key, with the Kindle Previewer, a free program for Windows or Mac. You download and run your file into it, and it'll tell you what it's going to look like on the Kindle. And, of course, I should have mentioned this. You can always get the Kindle app for your Mac or PC and look at it there, too. Good idea to test before you sell something on the Amazon store. They even say this right at the front. The first paragraph says, delivering a high-quality, properly formatted book to your readers is important. Books that aren't properly formatted may impact your sales in the future, and in some cases, you may be removed from the Kindle store. Well, if you can't read it. I don't know why this chess book that I bought ages ago, and it's just, you know, it's 600 chess positions that you're supposed to solve, and I just don't understand why it's been improperly formatted. Since the beginning. I just don't understand it. There were 600 positions. I had got 150 that worked, so that I could actually read. Scott is next in Westminster, California. Hi, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well. Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
I have a MacBook Pro, late 2011, 13-inch. Installed a 120 gig solid state hard drive by Intel.
Aren't you ambitious?
Yeah, I did that in the optical drive. Last week, all of a sudden, I started getting a message when I started up saying, disk is not properly inserted.
Yeah, I think the cable probably shook loose.
Is that? Well, because all I see on my disk utility is 8.4 megabyte Intel.
But 8.4 megabytes is not the right size.
No.
Did you buy an enclosure from somebody?
I got the enclosure off of, I guess it was OSC, I think.
Oh, OWC, Otherworld Computing. Yeah, MacSales.com. Yeah, I've done exactly that. It's kind of nice because then you have two drives. Who needs the optical drive? You have instead of a DVD player, a super drive. You get these little enclosures. You take out the super drive. You put your solid state drive in the enclosure so that it fits. That's purely so it fits, and then you connect it up. And what I did, maybe this was what you were supposed to do. I don't know. What I did is I put the solid state drive in for the regular drive, and then I took the regular drive and put it in the enclosure.
It's worked for the past 6-7 months.
Yeah, I think the cable shook loose. You just open it up and see.
Okay, all right, I'll take a look.
Yeah, that would be my guess. It could be that the Intel drive died. It's weird that it can see it and says that there's 8 megabytes on it. Maybe just something a little shook loose. That is a nice upgrade to do. It's a little tricky in a laptop, and especially in an Apple laptop. But I've done it. I did the for Otherworld Computing sells replacement SSDs for most of the Macintosh laptops, I think. And they have videos on there. And when you get it, for instance, I upgraded the MacBook Pro with Retina display. It already had a solid state drive, but I put a bigger one in. And there's a video on how to do it. And they give you the screwdrivers because Apple uses, you know, non-standard, of course, screwdrivers. They use something called a pentalobe on the newer laptops. And so they send you the pentalobe screwdriver you need and the Torx screwdriver you need. And then you watch the video. And it turns out in a MacBook Air and a Retina, you'd think it'd be hard. It's very easy to replace the hard drive. Putting a solid-state hard drive in makes a big difference in terms of boot speed. Now, Scott, listen up, because our chat room has done a little Googling, and Paul D. in the chat room says this is a bug in the Intel drive. That would explain why you could still see it. And it's called the 8 megabyte bug in the Series 320 solid state drives. But there is a fix. So it's a known bug in these Intel solid-state drives. You have to update the firmware on the drive. Wow. That is ugly. So your instinct was right. This because you can see the drive, It just says it's the wrong size. It does kind of imply that there's something wrong. Here's a link to techspot.com. We'll put this in the show notes. Intel confirms 8-megabyte bug in 320 series SSDs. 3 weeks after replicating the bug, Intel has published a firmware update that solves the issue. Unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be any way. I'm reading this article. This is from August 18th of 2011. Unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be any way to recover data lost on these glitched drives, but at least you can revive the unit. Wow. So if you have a 320, this is old stuff. I'm sure they've fixed it since then. You said you had it for 15 months. That's about right. The 8-megabyte bug appears after a power failure or system crash. It's unclear whether a hardware defect is to blame or something else, but there is a firmware. It's a firmware problem. It's funny because you bought the top of the line, right? You thought, oh, I am golden here. This is the Intel. There's nothing better, nothing faster. Yeah, well, oh well. And Askalot in the chat room is pointing me to an article. This happens every time there's a new iDevice, iPads and iPhones. People complaining about a yellow tint on the display. And I suspect this is the same as has been in the past. These yellow tints seem to go away as the glue dries. They're cranking these out so fast that the glue isn't fully dried yet. And there is a yellow cast which eventually goes away. So patience. Patience if you have that problem. Or you can always bring it into the Apple store since it's a brand new phone. And if they have any to replace it, they will. One of my staffers, Glenn Rubenstein, got an iPhone 5 and the screen was damaged. Just, it was not working at all. But he was able to. Did Glenn bring it back and get it replaced? I know he was going to last night. The problem is they're selling them out. I would hope that they would hold a few back for this kind of situation. In any event, this is completely normal. These yellowy displays, they happened with the iPhone 3G, the iPad 2, the iPhone 4S, the iPad new. And it's just that the glue hasn't dried yet. And as it dries, it will go away. So if you got a, I don't, you know, what's interesting is I think unfortunate, this is really unfortunate. The blogosphere makes money. People online sites make money when you click links, right? When you read the article. And they know that. And unfortunately, they don't seem to have the same kind of journalistic integrity as some of the better newspapers in the land. Not all. But I guess it's yellow journalism. It's sensationalism. And it's always been a problem, even in newspaper times. But it's really bad in the blogosphere. People who write for blogs, and it is many of the big tech blogs, don't care if the headline isn't quite accurate. They just care if you click. Actually, New York Times did this week. I'll talk about that when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's really frustrating. Good lineup on Twitter today, Chad. I'm excited. Molly, what are they all coming in? That's fine. She'll be on Skype. That's fine. But the other two are in studio. Right. What a great lineup. Thank you. No, we'll make up for last week.
I hope so. We have tons of iPhone 5 stuff. Still.
We do.
I haven't seen it yet. Do you have it?
Yeah, here.
Oh, done.
And I have it. We all have it. It's okay. Josh is running in. John is. They all have it. The new iPhone 5 is here. The new iPhone 5 is here. Hey, I want to talk a little bit about our phone system here at the studio. You know, Chad loves this, I have to say, and all our producers love it. It's called Ring Central. New, not true. We got it when when we built the studio. Who knew? You know, I'd never run a business before. I'd never built a studio or opened a new office before. And as I got to the point where I was, we were about to move in, I thought, it was like, phone system. What do you do for a phone system nowadays? And I guess you could call the phone company, right? And they put a big PBX in the basement and you have to, it's really costly and you lease the thing and it's very complicated. Fortunately, we have a really good contract IT guy, Russell. And he said, well, what I, he said, Russell, I didn't think about this. And he said, well, what I've done for the other clients, and it's really worked, is RingCentral. So we said, okay, like, whatever you say. The funny thing is, that was before they were advertising with us. And then they called later and said, would you, and we said, yeah, as a matter of fact, we just installed RingCentral. So here's the deal. RingCentral, there's no PBX. It's all cloud-based, right? You have a traditional phone. This is my RingCentral phone, but it has a lot of nice features, really sweet features on this thing. Everything's done on a website in terms of the phone tree. If you call our 800 number, we do have an 800 number. You can forward calls and stuff. But if you say, you know, whatever it is, press 7 to reach Leo, it can ring this desk phone, unless I have Do Not Disturb on, or it can ring my cell phone, or it can ring my home phone. I mean, it's completely flexible. If you leave a message, it's emailed to me. Fax is emailed to me. Yeah, it's a fax number, too. It's a fax machine. There's a RingCentral app for iPhone and Android. That means you can call from your phone, and it gets charged to the company, and it looks like it's a company number when you call. I mean, all these things are great. So I want you to try RingCentral right now. If you're setting up a new office or you have an office, zero startup cost, no PBX hardware. All-inclusive pricing starts at $20 per month per user. That's what we're paying. And all you do when you get a new employee is you get the phone and you plug it in the wall and it works. And there's a 30-day risk-free trial plus a special offer. When you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free up to 20 phones. What? One? I wish I'd known that when we bought ours. That's like half off the phones. When you buy one desk phone, you get a second phone free up to 20 phones. 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. 800-543-9980. If you have a small business, a big business, and you've been paying through the nose for a phone system, this is, I mean, in every respect, a better phone system. It's 21st century phone system. We've been a year now, very happy. Very happy. RingCentral.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. So it's, to me, this is a big, you know, I got started, now I'm going to have to continue. Headlines lie. I guess, what am I? I'm naive. Headlines have always lied. And there's some typical ways that they lie, one of which, and the New York Times just did this, which really bugged me, because they should be better than this. You know, established, I can understand bloggers. They didn't go to J school, blah, blah, blah. But the New York Times just published an article, or, you know, I guess it's a column, so maybe that's a little bit different. That's something like, is it over for Apple? Question mark. And it's one of those things where, yeah, I'm sure it drives clicks. And that's really the point now of headlines, isn't it? It's because of the web. It drives clicks. And so you'll often see headlines that state something wrong. But because they say it with a question mark, it gets them off the hook, right? Then they can say in the first paragraph, well, no, it's not over for Apple. But here's what some are saying. Or you publish the headline, iPhone 5 root users reporting yellow screens. Oh, no. Now, if you're, you know, interested in iPhone 5, or maybe even not, or maybe you just want a little schadenfreude at Apple's pain, you click on that link and you find out, oh, yeah, that's normal. In a day or two, the screens will cure and it'll be fine. It even says it in the article. But they don't care, because the point of it is get the clicks, because that's how you make your money. It's very predictable. For instance, when the iPhone 5 was announced, the pundits all wrote the articles, disappointing, not revolutionary. Whether they believed it or not didn't matter, because what they wanted was the clicks. Then, the best-selling iPhone in history sold out in the first hour. Apple probably, we won't know yet, but we'll know Monday or Tuesday, probably will sell 4 million phones this weekend. And it's probably sold out. So they'll write that story. Completely, you know, knowing that they said it 5 minutes ago, boring, now best-selling phone ever. And then they're writing the story, oh, and the maps are terrible, and it's awful, and oh, the world is coming to an end. Apple puts a terrible map app. Falkland Islands have no roads. Well, I guess if you live in the Falkland Islands, that's depressing. You probably shouldn't use it. But there are other choices for map apps that probably do a better job in the Falkland Islands. So if you're going, I'd suggest you get a new map app. The only complaint you could make, I guess, about Apple replacing Google Maps with its own Maps app is until Apple approves Google Maps, you'll miss features that you had in the Google Maps, like Street View, because nobody does Street View except Google. So we've lost Street View for some period of time. It's my strong suspicion that Google has already submitted a Google Maps app to the Apple Store, that Apple will approve it in the next few days. It'll be on the iPhone, and there'll be nothing to complain about. In fact, it'll be a better app. That already happened with the YouTube app. See, Apple wrote the Maps app using Google's data, and Apple wrote the YouTube app using an API, a secret API, in programmer's interface into YouTube, but they didn't keep it up to date. So Apple discontinued the YouTube app on iOS 6, and YouTube said, good, finally, thank you, and put their own app in there, and it's much better. It's up to date. It's better. It's an improvement for all, and I am sure Apple would be nuts not to approve a Google Maps app and get that in there, right? And then everything will be well. And the bloggers who are writing these stories probably know that. I'm sure they know that. They don't care. They want links. They want clicks. It's just a way to make money. Now, you can make, and of course, you can make the statement that, as some did, and my friend Anil Dash, who's a blogger and an entrepreneur, but Anil wrote, you know, Apple used to care about the customers first. This is a business decision that disadvantages customers. I guess you could make that case. I guess you can make that case, but somebody in the chat room, Lou, is saying, Apple kept Google Voice off the iPhone for a long time because they felt it was competitive. That's true. They did. And then the FCC and the Congress said, hey, what's going on here? And Apple said, oh, sorry. Yeah. And approved it. Remember that? Yeah. So they will. If Google submits a Maps app, it'll be back. Apple is not going to go up against the FTC, the FCC, and Congress. What happened to my caller? Did she hang up? Oh. Wait a minute. Here it is. Here's Lynn. It's a he. Lynn in Eagle Rock, California. Hi, Lynn. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. We've had great success with things you've talked about in the past, like DSL Extreme and Nod 32. And now I'm coming to you hoping that you can help me with TVs.
I'd love to. So you want to buy a big screen flat panel?
Yeah, I did some measurements while I was waiting, and we're about 8 feet away from the current TV, which is a 38-inch Panasonic. But it's finally given up the ghost after about 10 years, and everything seems to be going to the new flat screens, big screens.
Oh, you're going to love it, let me tell you. But you're going to want bigger than you think.
Oh,
because, it seemed fine. That 38 seemed fine. 8 feet away is good. It's nice and close. But, in fact, if you want to have the home theater experience, you're probably going to want to get 55 or 60 inches, even if you're 8 feet away.
Really? That big?
Yeah. Oh, believe me, you'll love it.
Okay.
Now, the folks at THX say that you want to have a seat that is roughly 30, that the screen is 36 degrees. That's not 90 degrees. It's just 36 degrees. But it's surprisingly big, and you can actually, they have a distance calculator on the web. I'll put a link in the show notes so you can see. And it's much bigger than you think. Much bigger than you think. The optimum HDTV viewing distance. Let me see here. You said 8 feet away. Let's see what the viewing distance calculator says for a TV set 8 feet away. We're going to say it's a 1080p screen, 16:9, and we're going to say if you get a 55-inch, let's see how far away you can be. 7.4 to 8.6 feet. Perfect.
That would be perfect. Yeah, 55-inch.
55-inch. Now, the next question you're going to want, and by the way, there are a lot of people sit farther away. 8 feet's pretty close. So those people, you're going to get 65, 70 inches. You're going to want it big. Next question is LCD or plasma?
Well, we have a skylight overhead, so if we watch it during the day, the room is kind of lit up.
Then you do want an LCD because they're brighter.
Okay.
Plasma gives you a better home theater experience, but it's generally best in a room you can darken because plasma screens tend to be glary and they're darker. They're not as bright. So LCD's good for a room that's lit.
Now, what's this about LCD versus LED?
Oh, that's a great question. We're going to take a break for the top of the hour. Can you hang on a little longer?
Yeah.
I'll answer that when we get back right after your local news. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about technology, computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater. Lynn from Eagle Rock, California is ready to buy a new TV. He says he's ready for a flat panel. We've decided the first choice was LCD or plasma. And because he's got a skylight and it's hard to darken the room, I think LCD is a better choice. Plasma arguably has a better picture. But there are some negatives to plasma. It uses more energy. They can be quite warm. So a small room, it would be warm. And it mostly that it's darker, so it doesn't look as good unless you can darken the room. I like plasma, and I usually do buy plasma screens because of their accuracy. There's another thing, Lynn, you might consider, which is that plasma is faster. It's more response. The response time is lower, closer to a CRT. That means for sports and action movies, it might look slightly better, although they've really fixed this in the LCD. But it's just one thing, another thing to consider when you're talking plasma versus LCD.
Challenging rather than easier.
We're not even begun. Now, often they talk about these as LED. They're really all LCD. What they're talking about is the backlight. So the way a liquid crystal display works, the liquid crystal is actually a shutter. When you apply electricity, it opens and closes. It actually closes when you apply electricity, or is it the other way around? I can't remember. But it's a shutter, and what it's doing is letting light through. So there has to be a light on an LCD panel. Now, until recently, the lights were all fluorescent because we couldn't get LEDs to be white. But once they solved the manufacturing issue and were able to get good quality white LEDs, they're much more reliable. They don't burn out. They're more consistent in their color. So they really are a better way of lighting it. In the first LED backlit displays, they had an LED, almost per pixel. They had tons of LEDs in the back, and that got too complicated to manufacture. So they now have edge-lit LEDs, and they're all the same. So definitely LED, but you'll be hard-pressed not to get an LED.
Okay.
The next issue is features, because you're now looking at Samsung, Panasonic, LG, Sharp, and those are the big names, Sony. And then there's the second tier name, Vizio, which I think makes excellent panels as well.
Oh, okay.
And all of them make excellent TVs. It's very hard to say one's better than the other. I could give you, some recommendations if you want.
Sure.
I would, first of all, look for a TV that has an internet connection. They call them smart TVs. The reason being, a lot of our content's coming in through the internet now. So you might as well future-proof and get that, even if you don't use it right away. Things like Netflix. You ever watch Netflix?
No.
That's streaming movies over the internet. There's other things like that. I think it's worth getting. How do you feel about 3D?
Okay.
Do you like 3D? Do you want 3D?
No.
Yeah, I don't either, but unfortunately you're going to get it. There are very few companies that will sell all the decent TVs now have 3D built in. But you don't have to use it. It's just there. So don't worry about 3D. If you don't get it, fine. But if you do, no, don't hate. You don't worry about it either. It's kind of the way they're doing it. I think Samsung in the LED backlits is probably my favorite, but I think Sharp also is very good. So is Sony. So is LG. My preference is probably Samsung.
Okay.
And what you should do is go look at them because, some of them are very thin, very small bezel. I like it when there's a small bezel, then the frame disappears and the TV takes over.
Okay.
I think that's all you need to worry about. You're going to talk a lot about 120 and 240 hertz.
That was my next question.
Yeah. What that is television is 60 fields per second, 30 frames per second, period. There's no more than that. But the problem is that, especially on LCDs, this responsiveness means that sometimes action gets blurred at 60 fields per second. So what they do is they frame interpolate. They double it or quadruple it. They take the 60 fields and double it to 120 or to 240. But the problem is there isn't more data. So they have to interpolate, invent the in-between frames. And what it gives is a very odd plasticky, it looks like video. It looks like a soap opera look. And I don't like it. I turn it off. Now, it will help if you get bugged by the action looking kind of blurry. It will make action more crisp. But it, in my opinion, it doesn't add to it, and I always turn it off. But, you know, it's not it doesn't hurt to have it. I wouldn't run out and get it. What you should do is look at a screen doing 120 or 240 hertz interpolation and see if you like it and have them turn it off and on, because what you'll see is it starts to look plasticky. It starts to look like a soap opera, video, like it's video. It's a little too good. Movies, by the way, are not even 30 frames a second. They're 24 frames per second. And that's a more cinematic feel. I would say unless, it's fine to have it, but I wouldn't pay more for it. Let's put it that way.
Okay. One last question, and that is, have you ever heard of somebody called Hisense?
No, I haven't. Is this a manufacturer?
Yeah, they're over at Costco, and I just did a quick search for it. They showed the Vizio, the Panasonic, and somebody called Hisense.
That's probably a house brand.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's probably, I'm looking at it. Hisense USA. They're new to me. I don't know them. If Scott Wilkinson were here, he might have an opinion about them. I would say Vizio's fine. Vizio is kind of a second-tier manufacturer that makes a great price, a great set for a great price. I'm not Hisense. I'm they make appliances too. I would guess this is a house brand, a Costco house brand.
The Vizio 47 120 versus the 240. You were saying I could look at the 240 and
or 120. You don't need it.
Yeah, okay.
And I wouldn't pay more for it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's about $100 more.
Yeah, don't do it then.
Okay. And the only negatives that I've heard on the Vizio was the sound card. The sound is just not that great.
Well, in most cases, I would recommend the television. On television, sound is usually not as good as it should be. I would recommend getting a home theater in the box that is going to be a surround sound. It's an inexpensive surround sound system that will be much better than any of these TVs built in. Sound.
Oh, okay. So basically get the Vizio for the screen and then get an HTIB.
Well, the Vizio is cheap. It's not the best. It's just the best bang for your buck. Samsung or LG or Sharp are going to give you the best pictures.
Okay, because I was looking at the Panasonic 47 versus the Vizio. There's about $100 difference.
Well, if it's only $100, the problem is that the Panasonic will offer a low-cost, medium-cost, and a high-cost version.
Okay.
So look at it and see how you like it.
Sounds. Oh, one thing that you might get a kick out of when you kept referring to me as her, the only good thing that's ever happened was I was able to sign up for the women's fencing team at college.
What'd they do when you showed up?
They kick out. I wasn't even asking for shower privileges.
Lynn, I apologize. I'm glad I got it right. From now on, when Lynn calls from Eagle Rock, I'll know.
Thanks much, Leo.
Enjoy your new TV. I'm glad that we could spend some time talking about it. Oh, they give you all these stats, and it's not clear. And the truth is, a lot of it's upsell, not necessary. If you 120 is plenty. Nobody needs more than 120 frames interpolation. I personally just turn it off even with that. But some people like it if you're watching sports or action movies. Most of this stuff is hype. Look at the screen. See if they can set it not to dynamic mode, but to movie mode. That'll give you a more accurate results. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I have to watch a Niners game. Uh-oh. 2313. What?
If you're a sysadmin or you're an IT, 13. You know the classic juggling act. Oh, how do you keep your company's systems running reliably on sometimes ancient hardware, and still they expect you to roll out new systems in no time?
I'm going to try to calm down and think of something nice and pleasant right now, like Gazelle.com. That'll cheer me up. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E. You know what this is? Gazelle is a place to sell your used gadgets so you can buy new gadgets, and it is great. We do it all the time. They pay the shipping on anything worth more than a buck. Go there right now. Let's say you want the new iPhone 5, and you have an iPhone 4S. This actually makes it a little bit more appealing. Remember I was talking about, do you really want the... Let's say you have a 64... This is actually what I have. 64-gig iPhone 4S on AT&T. If it's in good condition, normal signs of use, $260. If it's in flawless, $266. You know, I can guarantee you that's a good start towards that new iPhone. Now, you add it to the box, and they pay the shipping. Let's see what else. Let's say you have an iPhone 4 on AT&T, an older one. 32 gigs. Wow, that's good. $169. You know, that means it's going to cost you $33 off your contract's expired. They also buy BlackBerries, HTC, LG, Motorola, Nokia, and Samsung cell phones, iPads, iPods, Apple computers, other Apple products like the Apple TV and Apple Cinema displays. Look, this is a great way if you've got something gathering dust, if you've moved on. Join the million people, million gadgets traded at Gazelle.com. Oh, did I tell you how you get paid? Oh, this is sweet. So they'll send you a check, of course. They'll also send you a PayPal credit. But the best way to do it, if you buy stuff at Amazon, is get an Amazon gift card because they bump it up 5%, which is a great deal. They lock in the quote for 30 days, so you don't have to decide right away. You can think about it. Read the reviews. But get the quote now. Don't wait, because I can tell you one thing. This ain't going up in value. They've paid now almost $50 million to over 300,000 customers, over a million gadgets purchased by Gazelle. I want you to try it right now. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E. Sell your iPhone for cash, fair payment, fast price payment, fair prices, free shipping. Gazelle.com. Really great idea. That's what we do with our old stuff. Poor Lynn. He doesn't look like a lady. Leah Laporte, the tech guy, our musical director. I don't pick the songs. Don't blame me. Our musical director, Kyle Benham, picks the music. Does a great job, too. And you can get his playlist on his Google Plus site. K-Y-L-E space B-E-N-H-A-M. Yes, Kyle still uses Google Plus. I shouldn't laugh. You and 400 million people, Kyle. But we also put it on our website after the fact, techguylabs.com. That nice new website. I hope you enjoy it. James Aruvo's writing stuff down, keeping track of stuff. And Josh Windisch, after the fact, we put the videos up there, the audio. It's all there free for your use and search. Techguylabs.com. Claire, West Covina, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Claire.
Hi. Thank you, Leo. I have a question. I'd like to know the extent of the spyware monitoring on a cell phone. I have an old Chocolate Touch. I'm happy with it. All I need to do is...
If you have a chocolate, you're safe.
Really?
Yeah.
They can't attach spyware and listen to my conversations because I'm just 99.9% sure this is going on.
Well, if you have... here's a couple of things going on.
Mm-hmm.
If you had somebody who was out to get you and had access to your handset, perhaps they could put
That's
something.
What happened. I left it out accidentally, and someone got a hold of
the
it.
Chocolate is not a very, you know, it's not a smartphone. So let me see if there's any spyware available for it. It's not like, you know, if it were a smartphone like an iPhone or an Android phone, there's mm-hmm. lots of software out there that you could put on there that would monitor what people are doing. I don't think the, okay. I guess people do sell, geez, that's terrible. They sell programs for monitoring chocolates. There's, PrimeMobileTracking.com claims that they make software that will let you monitor text messages, phone calls, GPS locations. And they say that they work on the LG chocolate. So that's too bad. I'm sorry to hear that. And this person's tracking you, and you have evidence that they know stuff about you that they shouldn't.
Well, yeah, they shouldn't. And the evidence, no, but they all fly right below the radar and let out really big hints to me.
That's what's going on. That's terrible.
People just don't like themselves.
I would dump the phone. The thing about this is you can't do it without physical access to the phone. So if this person does have physical access to the phone or had physical access to the phone, he theoretically could do this. Is he fairly sophisticated?
I think so.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm not.
Yeah.
And I like my phone. All I need to do is make a call and receive a phone, receive a call. So I don't need all the new stuff that's going on.
Well, one thing you might do is bring it to a carrier shop and say, can I get this reset? I'm worried about spyware on here.
Okay, I did that over the phone with my carrier. They wiped it, but I still have this feeling that is there something inside? They can put a chip or something inside the phone?
No. If they wiped it, then you're probably all right. There's software they could put on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, your carrier could, you know, in theory, monitor you, and somebody could perhaps, I think you're probably all right. If the carrier wiped the phone, I think you're probably all right.
Okay.
I understand, and this could be, of course, a big problem with, crazy ex-boyfriends and things where they're stalking you, and I don't blame you for worrying. But I think if they've wiped the phone, 99%, you're probably all right. Now, there's other issues. If they have, for instance, access to your cell phone bill, if they have your login to your cell phone account, they can see at least who you're calling. You know, anybody with access to your bill can see all the phone numbers you text and call. So I would change your password on your Verizon account.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of any other. Yeah. I mean, if you're the NSA or the CIA, there's probably a chip you could put on a phone, you know. What's the first thing Jason Bourne does when he picks up the girl who's running from the bad guys? He takes her phone and he throws it out the window.
Exactly. I love that movie.
Because the phone is built-in tracking. It's got GPS, you know. But I think it's probably likely that you're all right. If they've wiped the phone, their software will be wiped. I understand you want to keep the phone. I mean, really, if you're really worried, I would just get a different phone. You could get a replacement chocolate, probably.
I understand. They told me that phone's retired.
Oh yeah, long ago. Yeah. But, you've had it for more than 2 years. You could probably go to the Verizon store and pick another free phone and replace it.
Okay.
Something similar to the chocolate. I remember the chocolate. I liked the chocolate.
I love it. And I'm just, like I said, I don't need all that fancy stuff.
And I just want you to have peace of mind. I cannot with 100% certainty say you're no longer being tracked. It's probable that wiped out whatever it was. But if you still, change your passwords on your email, change your passwords on all your accounts, because if this person had your email password, for instance, he probably could get enough information to seem like he was tracking you, right?
Okay.
So I would do that. Your phone's probably all right, but I don't want you to. I don't want you to be sleepless. So if you think that perhaps it's still going on, I would just trade in the phone. Then you know you're okay.
Understood.
Yep.
Great.
Yeah.
Now, really quick, let me just ask you: is it possible with this phone tracking? Is it possible for them once I bring the phone into the home into my house, they can see what's going on inside
my
house? I know that's
no,
crazy.
They can't turn on the camera on the phone.
They cannot.
Okay. Oh, this is so horrible. There were companies selling modified Nokia phones that let them turn on the microphone. So if you were a jealous husband, you could swap out or give your wife a new phone that had the capability for him to turn on the phone microphone and listen.
Okay.
So this stuff was made.
That's why it's probably best if he's had access to the phone, that it wouldn't be a bad idea to trade in the phone. It's unlikely that at this point he's doing that, but, you know, I understand your worry. And do change your passwords on your email, your Verizon account, things like that.
Will do.
Oh, I'm sorry that happened, Claire.
Thank you,
sure.
Leo.
You're welcome. Yeah. Unfortunately, these devices we carry are really made for spying on people, unfortunately. That's kind of that's why people are so worried about privacy, and I understand it. And I am not, you know, I don't worry so much about companies spying on me. That's what I think a lot of people say, oh, my goodness, you know, Google's spying. Google doesn't care what I do. I do worry about other individuals spying on you. They have more of a incentive, don't they? Jealous ex-husband. You know, unfortunately, we see this happen all the time. And so in that case, you know, and a restraining order isn't going to fix it. Because if the person is technologically sophisticated, there's all sorts of stuff they can do. Sorry to say. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. There have been so many parodies of Gangnam Style. How long before that burns out? It's getting close, isn't it? San Francisco Giants clinched the Western Division last night, and everybody was doing the Psy Gangnam Style dance. It's pretty catchy, though. Chat room says it burned out a week ago. Is it yet the number one video on YouTube? It's got to be close. Got to be beating the Biebs. Randy, Simi Valley, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Randy.
Hello, Leo. Long time. This is my first time caller. I was wondering of smartphone platforms, three or so, which one do you prefer for the purpose of contact management, you know, like the address book? Which one of them, or is one of them better than the others at, you know, having a lot of detail in the contacts and being able to transfer it around and things like that?
I would say Android is a clear leader there for a couple of reasons. It interfaces well with the Google Contacts. Contacts.google.com. It has arbitrary fields. You can add fields of any kind. It will, on most Android phones, you can, if you wish, you don't have to, merge it with your Twitter and Facebook contacts. I like merging it with my Facebook contacts because that adds a picture to people's contact information, often adds additional information if they're friends. So that's pretty nice. So I would say, you know, this is one where Android has a pretty strong advantage. Now, all three of them are very similar. I don't think there's a huge difference between them. Windows, if you're a Windows user, a Windows phone might be better because it interfaces with Live, and so you can manage it on Live. But,
Well, I'd like to, on my PC, you know, I use a database that has about 30 fields for each contact, and that's, in the past, that's been important to me, but right now I want to get a smartphone and see if I...
Well, I think the first thing to do before you even buy a smartphone would be to get that data onto Google Contacts. You have a Google account, probably most people do, via Gmail and
yeah,
so forth.
Yeah, and I have some of my contacts on there. But...
Yeah, I would take a look and play with that, because every capability that is there is available on an Android phone. Now, the iPhone... you know, certainly lets you do a variety of interesting contact fields, but it doesn't have kind of arbitrary fields. But they have some good ones, like right, phonetic pronunciations, and you have related people and so forth. It integrates with Siri, which is kind of nice, but it's not, in my opinion, not quite as expandable as the Android
field. What about the Windows new phone?
Well, you know, there's another example. If you're a Windows user, you probably already have a Microsoft account of some kind. So you could try live.com. That contact list is the one, or outlook.com. That contact list is the one that will be automatically pumped into your Windows phone. Although, again, it'll integrate into Facebook. It'll integrate into Google as well. Most of them are very similar. I have to say, most of them are very similar. There's kind of minor differences. But if you if you ask me, as you did, which is the best, I'd say Android by far.
And, yeah, that's kind of what I figured. I figured that was the answer, that, you know, just Gmail is the way to deal with this for right now.
Yeah, because, and you know, if you're already using it, you can get a pretty good sense of what's possible.
Right. Okay.
The only reason people, you know, don't take advantage of all of this stuff is they're worried about Google spying on them. But if you're not, I don't think Google is in particular, but, you know, if that's something that worries you, I just think that the management.
If you use it for a business and you have your customer information in there, you know, that's kind of a.
Well, but that's exactly why Google would not do that, because it would be a, you know, they'd be out of business.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And they have no real reason to do that.
Yeah, but then what do you tell your customers? You know?
Well, yeah. Look, if Google ends up spying on you and your customers and somehow releases that information out, then you can say, "Hey, boy, Google! And isn't it a shame what happened to them? They used to be a really big company, and now they're gone."
Okay. Yeah.
It's not in their interest to do that.
Right back on them.
Yeah. I mean, really, seriously, I don't think Google is spying on you or going to steal your customer information. I do think that they're very powerful. You know, ultimately, if you're really serious about that, you're going to end up using a CRM system like, you know, Salesforce.
I've used those in the past, you know, and I ended up building my own database, you know, just using a regular database
program. This is better than doing that for sure. You know, I would say that you're much better off using the Google tools. And it integrates then into everything else as you do it. I mean, I think it's really fantastic. People are telling me that the iOS now has custom fields, but I don't see it. It looks like they have additional fields, but I don't see any arbitrary fields. And that's one thing I like about the Google contacts is you can have.
Yeah, I'd like to get, you know, have a base of, you know, 1,000 or 2,000 contacts, you know, but I getting up that far, you know, it gets tedious, you know.
Yeah. I keep everything in Google now, and I trust it, and I found it to be the best in terms of synchronization. I just think it's the best way to do it, and I think they are very, very flexible and powerful. And then you use Google Apps, and I mean, it just works beautifully, and that's really, frankly, a compelling reason for using an Android phone. It's so nicely integrated in. I just don't find Apple has the same kind of flexibility, and really, I don't think Apple's that interested in business. Yeah, see, it doesn't look like Apple lets you add arbitrary fields. I'm just looking at it on iCloud as well as on the iPhone. You cannot add arbitrary fields. You have a certain number of fields you can add. So if you have an unusual field, you know, third cousin, fourth removed, or whatever, I don't know, you know, golf handicap. Let's say you want to put golf handicaps into your contact list. You could put it in notes, but you can't create a field called golf handicap. You can do that with Google. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. We just lost Chris in New Mexico. He was going to be next. So how about Steve in Chino Hills, California? Hi, Steve.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. Welcome.
All right. It's an honor to be able to speak to you finally. I've been trying for a couple of weeks. I've been an iPhone guy since they came out. And about a month ago, I heard you talking about how you liked your GS3.
Oh, I love it.
Way better than your iPhone. And so after that marinating in my mind as to why you would possibly say that, you know, for about 2 weeks, I looked into it. And finally, about 2 weeks ago, I traded my iPhone 4S.
Oh, no. All right. Well, what do you think?
I have to tell you, I can't believe I've been missing out on this technology.
It's funny when you compare the new iPhone 5 screen, which, of course, is the biggest screen Apple's offered, to a Galaxy S3, it looks positively puny.
Yeah, it sure does. And my only problem I was afraid to do was I keep all of my contacts and my appointments and stuff on my Mac in the iCloud.
Right.
Well, I did find on the Android store two programs that actually sync up your iCloud account with your Android account.
Beauty. So, that's wonderful.
It just worked out so perfectly.
I've ended up moving everything, as I told the last caller, into Google's contacts, because even with an iPhone, no matter what phone you use, when you including in a Windows phone, when you log into your Google account, it just automatically fills it in. Gone are the days. Oh, I remember doing this, too, of re-entering cell phone numbers. Hang on, Steve. We'll talk some more after the break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
But what's your handicap, Weird Al?
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, I'd love to hear from you. Maybe you'd like to defend your favorite phone. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Let's talk. Website is techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. We were talking to Steve in Chino, Chino Hills, California. He says he bought a Samsung Galaxy S3. Must have been a difficult thing, especially since with the iOS, with an iPhone, you invest quite a bit into the ecosystem. You can move your music over anyway.
I'm absolutely not missing anything on the iPhone since I've had this phone.
Well, that's great.
I do have a question for you, though, about the Galaxy. I've noticed that the Wi-Fi signal on it around my house isn't as strong as the iPhone was.
I've noticed that, too. I don't know. What I've noticed is that I get frequently unable to join a network for some reason.
Yeah.
And maybe it's a strength issue. Maybe there's some other technical issue.
I've got five routers around my house.
So it's not a strength issue. Yeah.
Being switches, so I got plenty of signal strength, but I just noticed that the strength isn't great. iPhone.
And I never have this problem at all with the iPhone. It just joins the network, rock solid, stays on it, and stays there.
Yeah. For a minute, I thought it was maybe because I had my time capsule up there with Apple, not Galaxy to connect.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking on the Fandroid website, and other people are reporting similar issues. I've done some of the things they suggest: forgetting the router, reconnecting it, even rebooting the phone. And I'm not really sure. I agree. There seems to be an issue there, and I didn't have this issue earlier on, so I suspect that the most recent update caused a problem.
Oh, okay.
So, and we are expecting to get an upgrade to Jelly Bean soon, very soon for the new for the S3. So, my hope is that that fixes the problem. I agree with you. I don't know exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
I'm scrolling through some of these posts here to see if anybody is having a solution for it, because there are others who have
somebody
this problem.
On the posts we're mentioning about not being able to connect your Apple TV. I have everything Apple, and there's actually an app on the Android store that lets you stream to your Apple TV.
There you go. Wow. That's awesome. That's great.
And no setback to not having the Apple iPhone for me.
I think one advantage Android has, and it's for some a disadvantage, but is that it's a more open system, more open ecosystem. And so there's a lot more stuff out there.
You've got to be careful.
Well, that's not been proven, by the way. There's been malware on the Apple store as well. Apple's approving tens of thousands of apps a day. They can't be 100% sure that they're checking everything. So I think you have to be careful no matter what. But the good news is in both situations, Google and Apple are very quick to find malware and pull it. So it's hard. You'd have to be extremely unlucky to get bit. We read the stories, but, you aren't downloading Russian wallpaper applications in most cases.
Do you run an antivirus on your Android phone?
I do not now. I used to run Lookout. It's certainly a good program. It's free. Not a bad thing to have. But
okay.
I haven't had a problem. So it's funny because I really did expect that smartphones would be a fertile platform for malware. And we really haven't seen that yet. Not sure why.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. I'll keep an eye peeled for this Wi-Fi issue because I have the same issue. Not sure why that happens. It did start happening with the latest firmware update. So my suspicion is something went wrong with the current firmware update. And I'm just not sure. It's a little bug. I'll keep looking for answers to that question. Most of the time I can get it to join. It just doesn't work as easily. The iPhone seems to be pretty good. Although I have to say Wi-Fi is always an issue. And Wi-Fi is never super reliable. One thing that you're lucky and it is nice to get is LTE. And it's finally here for the iPhone. That makes a big difference, that high-speed data network. Jim's in Yorba Linda, California, our next caller. Hi, Jim.
Hello, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
I read in the paper that Siri would be available for the iPad 3 now when they introduced the new iPhone. And I was wondering if that is true and what do
it
I do?
It is. So if you have the latest iPad, you just go to the settings and run the system update. It'll say system iOS 6 is available. Install it, and you will have Siri.
Now, do I lose Google Maps and get Apple Maps at that time?
Yes, you do. I'm sorry. So that's the trade-off. Now, the nice thing is you can use Siri to integrate with the maps, which is kind of cool. You could say, Siri, take me somewhere. You could even say, as you're driving, Siri, what's my ETA? Siri will say, you should be there in an hour. So it integrates nicely. But, yeah, that's part of the iOS 6 deal is they're taking YouTube off and they're taking Google Maps off or the Maps app off.
Oh, you're YouTube also?
Well, both YouTube and Maps were written by Apple to interface to Google's properties. Both of those are gone. Now, the good news is YouTube does have a YouTube app written by Google that replaces it. It's free in the App Store. You can get that. I'm hoping, and you should keep your eye peeled, if you really like Google Maps, I'm hoping that Google is, I've heard that they've already submitted it to the Apple Store. So one hopes that in the next few days it'll be available.
Okay, yeah, Google Maps is spectacular.
There are other great map apps. Have you ever used Waze, W-A-Z-E?
I think I did, like a year or so, we'll play around with it.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting because it's crowdsourced. They use Google Maps and other maps for the maps, but then people change them and update them, and if traffic's bad, it'll let you know to reroute. It saved my butt a number of times. Big traffic accidents. I was coming home from the airport last month, and I had Waze running, and it said traffic is stopped on the 880, but I've got a back way, and it routed me through the smallest back streets. I never would have found it myself, and it got me where I was going much faster. Things like that, I think, are spectacular. Very, very valuable. Waze is a little funky in other ways. W-A-Z-E. It's Android and iPhone. But if you live in an area, as you do, where a lot of people use it, you'll know where speed traps are. You'll know if there's debris in the highway, a car stalled on the side. It really is, I think, it's a great safety feature.
Now, do you use Waze in place of your, let's say, my Android phone in place of the normal navigation?
I do.
Okay.
It has turn-by-turn navigation.
Wow. Okay, I'll give it a try.
And it's free. Now, it uses on-the-air data, just as Google Maps did. But give it a try, you know, and then if you like it, then you may say, hey, I don't care if Apple takes it off. I want Siri and Waze.
Yeah, I use that. I have Google Maps and their navigation on my Android phone, so I don't totally.
Oh, well, it's better on the Android phone anyway. It has turn by turn. What I'm hoping is that they'll put that Google Maps on the Apple side, because that is a great experience. It's got Street View. Hey, thanks for the call, Jim. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, hour number three of the Tech Guy Show. As the Niners go down to defeat. Hey, at least my San Francisco Giants, clinched the National League Western Division last night. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number to call. Our website is techguylabs.com. I'm not talking sports. This is not a sports show. This is a technology show. Anything with a chip in it. Computers or the internet. MP3 players, cell phone. Does anybody use them anymore? We can talk about the new iPods. Sure, that's an MP3 player. The iPhone 5. We're talking really about what the king of phones is. You know, used to be. In fact, I dragged out my original iPhone, the one I waited 6 hours in line to buy, because it was a revolution. This changed everything. This original iPhone just was so much better than anything on the market. Remember what it was competing with: Windows Phone 6 and Blackberry's. You know, and I mean, just nothing in this ballpark. It was a revelation.
But that was 2007, right? And the good news is people saw this, were inspired by it. You might say Samsung copied it. I think that's fairly accurate in the early years. But it got better and better and better, and the competition rose to the occasion. And now we have some really great choices in the world. So there's the iPhone 5, admittedly, top of the heap. Not the best necessarily, but one of the best. Best among equals, perhaps. Then you've got Android phones, the current Android leader, the Galaxy S3. But soon we're going to see a Galaxy Note 2, which will be a giant 5.5-inch screen. The HTC One phones are spectacularly good. And there are other, you know, the Optimus, the new LG, giant LG. There's some really great Android phones out there to choose from. I've been testing the new Razer Max, the new Droid. 4 or 5 days on standby. The battery won't die on this thing. That's the best smartphone battery life I have ever seen. Incredible. So there's some really good choices out there. And here come the next crop, the new Windows Phone 8 phones. And there's the Nokia Lumia 920. That's the one I thought I wanted. Then HTC this week announced and showed their 8X. And I'm told by everybody who was at that event, including my Windows phone experts, Mary Jo Foley and Paul Thurrott, they do a show on our network, that the new HTC 8X is the Windows phone again. Also, I'll probably get those when they come out on AT&T or Verizon. Aren't we lucky? Aren't we lucky? I mean, this is the point. I'm not going to call a winner on this because I think that we have 3 or 4 really great phones to choose from. And every carrier has a great phone, whether it's T-Mobile, Sprint, AT&T, Verizon, even Cricket and Boost and some of the smaller ones. Everyone has a great phone you can choose from. So you have a good choice. You have a good choice. And that's great. That's great news. So 2007, look, the iPhone was it. It was the cell phone. It was the smartphone. There was no question about it. Fast forward to 2012 and 2013, we've got some great choices. And I don't think you can go far wrong getting any of the top phones that I just mentioned. I think, you know, you should look at the one that matches your needs. Ed's in Palmdale, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ed.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
Great, great. I got a question here. My daughter just purchased the Android phone.
Okay.
So the only internet connection we have right now is on the phone. So I'm trying to find, is there a possibility of plugging a screen onto that?
Some Android phones, they have, they all have the USB connector, the micro connector. But you should check the specs for that phone. Some of them will, if you get the right cable, put HDMI out of that. So you could hook it up to a computer. And you could, in many cases, hook up a Bluetooth keyboard. And that suddenly becomes, I've seen people do this, turn their Android phone into a desktop computer. And if you think about it, the modern Android phones with dual-core 1.5 gigahertz processors are probably faster than most desktops out there right now.
And she has the Android, what's the top-of-the-line one?
I don't know. Which one did she get?
The Samsung.
The Samsung Galaxy S3?
Yes.
Good news! Yes, that supports HDMI.
HDMI.
Yep. So what you're going to do is you go online and you look for Amazon will sell it. A lot of them will do that. You look for a USB to HDMI connector. Then she can connect. Does she have a TV with an HDMI connector on it?
She has an Apple computer. She has a second.
Oh, well, that's different. Now, she could use. Now, okay, so the other thing she can do is use the S3 as an access spot, as a Wi-Fi access spot. Use the connection on the S3 for the Apple.
Interesting.
That's probably the best. I didn't know she had a computer, too. So she just doesn't have internet access, but she has a smartphone and a computer.
All right.
Yeah, she should look at hotspotting. It'll be a setting in the phone. She may need to contact her wireless carrier. Most of them charge an extra fee to use it as a hotspot. I know Verizon does. But if you've got good 3G or better yet 4G, if I use my iPhone 5 on Verizon, if I use that to hotspot, which basically means it's like a Wi-Fi access spot in the phone, I'm going to get better performance on this thing than I get on my cable modem at home.
LTE is that fast. So, yes, Edge, that it, I think that's an interesting turn of events now. That some of the speed that we're seeing on these mobile networks is faster than our land-based networks. And I wouldn't be surprised to start seeing, in fact, I'm sure this is what the carriers are worried about, I wouldn't be surprised to see people starting to use their smartphones as their internet service provider. Verizon charges $24 a month to use 4G as a hotspot. So that's probably less expensive than your internet service provider. Now, do watch those data caps, because it won't be hard to go to buzz through those at those speeds. So do be careful of that. But that's I think for some people who have limited needs to access the internet, they just want to do email or a little bit of surfing, that's great. If you're going to start watching Netflix, you might want to look at something more economical. Adam in Valencia, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. It's great to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. What can I do for you?
I have a question about mini disc players.
Ah, are they still around?
Well, in my house they are. but I can't. I'm having trouble finding replacement discs, you know, like extra discs, mini discs.
Yeah, so mini disc was a format that Sony just wouldn't let die. The MD players that Sony was making were kind of like Walkmans. The mini disc had a lot of benefits. But I got bad news for you. Sony did let it die. And so it's going to be harder and harder to find mini discs. I'm sure there must be somebody, maybe on eBay, selling these. But they're not making them anymore, as far as I know. Let's see. Here's Sweetwater sells them. Now, see, this is the good news. A lot of DJs. Remember, if you ever hired a DJ for a wedding in the last maybe 6 years, there was a whole period of time, you know, initially DJs would bring records, LPs, vinyl. Then they started bringing CDs. Then they started bringing mini discs. Now they just bring iPods with them. But, because DJs and professionals use them, go to Sweetwater.com. They're still selling them. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Look at that. $5 each.
Sure you know the DJ. Sure you. Everybody's on the guest list.
Leo Laporte, you're on my guest list. No velvet rope here. Just come on in. The tech guy show's on the air. DJ spinning his mini discs. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. I was talking with the chat room, and they asked me about the Amazon Kindle HD. I haven't really talked about that much. The Kindle was announced with some fanfare by Amazon a couple of weeks ago. I ordered it immediately, and the 7-inch version is here. Their bigger 8.9-inch version will come out next month. And the Paperwhites, the new Kindle e-ink readers, will come out next month as well. So the only thing we've got right now is the 7-inch tablet, the replacement for the Kindle Fire. It's nice. I can't see any reason to buy one. In fact, I canceled my order for the 8.9 after I saw this. It's very much like the original Kindle. It has some of the same problems. It's a little bit sluggish. It's a better screen, better speakers, but still, there are competing tablets that I think are as good, better for a similar price. So this is a $200 tablet. It's a 7-inch tablet based on Amazon's own customized version of Android. It doesn't really feel like Android. In fact, the only real market for this, if you ask me, is somebody who doesn't want anything too sophisticated. They want something easy. And mostly what they want to do is consume content from Amazon, whether it's books, TVs, shows, movies, maybe a few games, that kind of thing. It does not compete well against something like Google's Nexus 7 tablet, which is the same size, a little more expensive. The Nexus 7 is $200 for 8 gigabytes. The Kindle Fire HD is $200 for 16 gigabytes. So it has a little bit more memory for the same price. But I got to tell you, the Nexus 7 is still inexpensive. And frankly, is so much better. It's really Android. It's Jelly Bean, the latest version of Android on top of it. Much more flexible. And frankly, performs better. It's got a better screen, better sound, and it's much, much faster. It's sad to say the Kindle Fire suffers from some of the same issues of sluggishness that the original Kindle did. I was a little surprised, frankly. Its browser's not as good. I have a hard time, frankly, saying this is worth it. I can't recommend it, except for somebody who just doesn't want to deal with Android's complexity, and they're going to spend a lot of time reading books. The one thing it does, which I really like, and it's, to my knowledge, it's the only way to do this, if you are an Amazon book reader and you also like to listen to books on Audible.com, which I do, so if you like reading and listening to audiobooks, they integrate quite well together on the Kindle Fire HD, because what I can do is I can open up a book on the Kindle reader, and it has a little play button next to it. If I have the audiobook available, I can press the play button, and as I'm listening to the audiobook, this is a Agatha Christie novel I got for free, it'll actually highlight the text in the book as I'm listening to it. Now, there are people who this would be very helpful for, kids who are dyslexic. There are some people who this would be great to read along, listen along as they read. For kids who are learning to read, that'd probably be very useful. And it has the whisper sync capability, so you could be reading it on the Kindle Fire, then get in your car, and the Android app or the iPhone app of the Audible books will pick up, and you can start listening where you left off reading. So this is nice. That's it. That's the only, as far as I could tell, the only advantage. Now, they spend a lot of time talking about the dual speakers and the Dolby sound. Yeah. It's a high-quality transistor radio sound. Well, I'll play a little music for you. Let you be the judge. Let's see. I think I had a Prince song playing on Pandora here. Let me just hold this up to the microphone. You can hear it. It seems a little tinny to me. I don't hear a lot of bass. It's not bad. It's stereo. It sounds like a... You know, if you want good sound, you're going to listen to headphones, frankly. It's not a party device. Now, how do I stop it? Thank you. Can't recommend it. If you really want a 7-inch tablet, and I think I like 7-inch tablets, either get the Google Nexus 7 or wait and see what Apple does next month, because they're going to have a 7.85-inch tablet. But the Kindle Fire is not it, I'm sad to say. Jeff in Hollywood, California, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
It's great. Pick up the phone if you would.
Okay. Sorry about that. You caught me.
I know. It's not your fault, Jeff. And for those listening at home, people are often on hold for a very long time. And, it's fine.
Great. Thank you so much for taking my call, Leo. I have a question. I work in Hollywood in the pre-production business. And we have a lot of movies that we have in our possession before they're released, so there's a lot of MPAA concerns.
I bet.
And one of the things I've been charged with is finding a solution that will allow maybe a replacement or more hefty replacement for the Air Video server. Our challenge is that it only has a client on the iOS devices and not on the OS devices, computers, Mac computers that we use in the office. And we need to be able to... something as a solution possibly that would prevent the clients and the employees from actually having access to the files, that locks the files down but will only stream the video of the movies and projects we're working on.
It sounds like you want to have all the files on a server that's secured, but then have people on their desktops and laptops be able to watch the streaming video without pirating it.
Exactly, and as well as on their iOS devices.
And on the iOS devices.
And it's only for our in-house, it would be in-house or for our clients, so it's not for the public.
I think the iTunes media server would work in this case. So you can get most network-attached storage devices or NAS devices, Synology, Netgear has the Ready NAS. Those have iTunes servers built in. So you put your content on there, you lock it in a closet so nobody has physical access to it. Nobody, unauthorized has physical access to it. But anybody who has iTunes on any of their devices can see it and can stream it. And I don't know of any way to capture that. I mean, if somebody has a camcorder, they can play it on their computer and record it that way. You can't stop that. But what you can stop people doing is bringing in a USB key and copying it to the USB key.
Will that be an in-house? We've also removed all USB and all mass storage device, access to all of our computers.
So you have it pretty locked down.
Yeah, the MPAA is telling us to do this, and we're just trying to find a solution that they can view it, where they can work on this stuff, create copy and that type of stuff from the movies.
But yeah, I understand. It's a big problem. Academy screeners are, if you go to the BitTorrent sites, it's all Academy screeners. You know, once you let this stuff out, you'd think Academy voters would have more class. Now, Tom is in our chat room. He says he works at a post house. He had the same issue. But Tom, how did you solve this? Did you use the iTunes media service to do this? It's admittedly true that if you can play it on the computer, people who are ingenious can record it. But I think this would work up to that point. So that's what I would do, is use the iTunes capability. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, that great Richard Dreyfuss narration of the Apple, the Here's to the Crazy Ones ad. Probably one of the great, all-time great ads. All-time great ads. Although, in some ways, ironic, isn't it? Because Apple probably has more rules than any company on earth. And if you're an Apple employee, go ahead and try to say, but I'm a rule breaker. I'm a crazy one. I'm a round peg in a bye. Here's your check. See you later. So maybe, remember, this is marketing. This is marketing. Steve Jobs actually did it. It's an original narration of that, and it was not used, but it's floating around. In fact, it's on YouTube. Enron Rocks has just posted it to our chat room. Chat room is a great place to go for that kind of thing. You could find a link to it on our website, techguylabs.com. techguylabs.com. Back to the phones we go. And Joe and Sandy. Oh, and to finish up on our call from before the break. He wants to stream movies in a way that they're somewhat locked down. And the real point of that is, I think if you use an iTunes media server and you can do it from a Mac or from a network attached storage, and if people are using iTunes on their Windows or Macs, they can watch it. If they're using an iOS device, they can watch it. On Android, I'm not sure if they can watch it, but I would bet there's a Android device of some app of some kind that lets you watch iTunes media server content. So and it's secure, but of course, no matter what, if they can play it back on their screen, an employee who is motivated can make a copy of it, either a screen capture or just bring a camcorder or point their iPhone at it and record it off the screen. So it's going to be difficult if your employees really want to get it out of there. It's going to be difficult to stop that. But I'm sure the MPAA understands that. I'm sure they're sympathetic. Joe in San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Joe.
Hello, Leo. I have probably a fairly simple question, but the other morning when I woke up, my phone had on the screen said to go ahead and download the iOS 6 on my iPhone.
Right.
I did that, and it wiped out my contact list.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. You didn't have a backup, huh?
Well, I do have a backup, but it changed some things on my computer, too. When I go in there now I did have a backup. It was probably 2 weeks old or so. But now when I plug into my computer, where it used to come up and say devices, where I go and do the backup, it's not even there anymore. And then, when I go to search, let's say I want to find a email from a certain person, which I always do, when I punch it in, it'll say, no emails found. It erased that ability to do that on my computer.
So when you put a new operating system on anything, there's always a risk of data loss. That's why it says back it up before you do this. And the way you back up an iPhone, the iOS devices will back up to the internet via iCloud, but it's slow. And I think the best thing to do is to hook it up to a computer, sync it, and make sure you make a backup copy before you install iOS, because really the best thing to do after you install iOS is to, if anything should go wrong, is to reinstall your data, and you'll be back to normal. You'll be on iOS 6, but you'll have all your data. Given that you don't have a backup and you didn't do that, I don't know of any magic.
It's gone, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry, but, you know, that's why they say backup before you do it. I'll tell you what, we'll use you as an example, Joe. I'm sorry. If you're listening, make sure you make a good backup. The real problem that I have with the backup system that Apple offers is there's no way to validate or verify that it got backed up. And you've heard me talk about backup. We, you know, our sponsor, Carbonite, I talk about it all the time. And one of the things I say is any backup solution should give you the ability to spot check the backup. You should be able to look at it, open it, see if everything's on there. It's tough because an iOS device, you know, how are you supposed to browse that on your desktop computer? I don't know, but that's the problem. So what you need to do is go into iTunes and see what backups you have, and I guess use the most recent backup. You might check if you were backing up to iCloud. I'd log on to your iCloud account, iCloud.com, and see if the contacts are there. Chat was pointing out, rightly so, that you may have been backing up to iCloud without even knowing it. Also, somebody in the chat room says he works at Warner's, and they use a program to do exactly what our caller wanted to do at the post house, called DAX Solutions, D-A-X Solutions. It's a streaming solution with logins, password protected, video playback. DAXSolutions.com. Sounds like a professional solution for post houses and others who want to keep a lid on their data. So thank you for that suggestion. Robert in Lafayette, Louisiana. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Robert.
Yes, hi. How are you? Yeah, hello.
Hey, welcome. I'm great.
Thanks. Good. Quick question. I'm kind of torn here. I want to buy a Mac laptop, and I'm either looking at the MacBook Air or the MacBook Pro Retina. Two different machines.
Completely. Very different, yeah.
So.
And I own both.
And I'm torn between.
Yeah, you should do what I do, buy both. Then you're not torn. No, it's a difficult decision. I'll say this. The MacBook Pro with Retina display is the best computer I've ever owned. I love it. I'm in love with it. But it's considerably bigger and heavier than a MacBook Air. And it's more expensive. It starts at $2,199.
Right.
If you're looking for power, though, it is the most, I think it might be, benchmarks I think indicate it's the fastest Mac made. Faster than any other Macintosh, desktop or laptop. So, and by the way, I bought the base model. I did not get more. I think 8 gigs of RAM, which is what comes in the base model, is plenty.
Right, that was my next question.
Yeah,
right.
No, that's plenty unless you're doing something unusually RAM heavy. I did feel a little constrained by the 256 gig hard drive. You might want to look at a bigger hard drive.
I do a lot of work, Photoshop, Illustrator, this kind of heavy kind of type program. So that's why, you know, I don't know if the MacBook Air would be sufficient enough. Would that, like, satisfy my needs?
It's pretty fast. In fact, the newest Airs have an i7 processor. Really where you run into trouble is the size of the solid-state drive.
Correct.
The base model MacBook Pro with Retina is $2,200 bucks, has a very fast i7, 8 gigs of RAM, and a 256 gig drive. For most uses, that's probably enough. It also comes with a very fast GeForce GT650 video card. Now, the Airs, the video cards are not as fast, and for you, that might be an issue. They only go up to 4 gigs of RAM. You can, if you get the top-of-the-line Air, you can, let's see, I'm going to upgrade it. I'll put an i7 in it, a 2 gigahertz i7. I'll put 8 gigs of RAM in it. It's $1,699 with kind of comparable specs, but it's right. but the screen is not the same. And I'll tell you what, once you go to that Retina, you're going to love it. You know, it's so what we're saying here basically is for $500 more than a similarly configured MacBook Air, you get the Retina display, you get a 15-inch display instead of 13, and it's still pretty thin and light. For high-end users like you, for pros, I think the Retina is the way to go. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. What is it? What is the name of the group? It's like Mountains to Men or something like that? Monsters and Men.
Love this. Monsters and Men.
Love them. Love them. You can get the whole playlist, everything that Kyle plays. He's our musical director on his Google Plus stream. It's Kyle Benham, K-Y-L-E-B-E-N-H-A-M. You should follow him. Circle him, I guess they call him. But we also put it in our show notes at the end of every show. And the show notes, everything I say, all the links, and eventually video and audio, too, are all available at TechGuyLabs.com. TechGuyLabs.com. Back to the phones we go. Just a few more minutes left in the show. Let me see how many more I can answer. Dave in Glendale, California, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, Dave.
I have an HP LaserJet 3100 all-in-one printer that I just love. It's a parallel port, and I'm going to be getting a new computer tower.
A parallel port printer? Wow!
It really, I mean, like the quality of it, and the thing is such a dependable workhorse. It's like a member of the family. Anyway, I'm wondering about parallel port to USB and possible drivers. I was wondering if you could ask the brain trust that you have there that might have some suggestions as to what I can use. I'd hate to just get, you know, have to lose it because it, it
can't. Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure that you could use... It's not the cable, right? I mean, you can get a parallel port to... USB cable. Problem is the drivers aren't going to see it.
I'm sorry, I don't follow.
Well, the drivers are not going to see the printer because the drivers for a parallel port printer are going to expect a parallel port.
Right, right. So I do have the original, you know, CD disc that came with it.
Won't help you, right? Because they don't look at the USB port. They don't even know what that is. So. Now, there is one possibility. HP makes something called JetDirect, which is a Ethernet connection for some of its printers. I don't know if you can get a JetDirect connector on your HP 3100. I presume you don't have Ethernet on it.
I don't.
Yeah.
Well, it's like I have a computer wizard who helps him with this stuff. I am completely in the dark ages when
You're getting a desktop, right?
Yes.
All right. All right, so you can get a card that will be a parallel port card to put in that printer.
Uh-huh, okay. Okay, let me make a note here.
So that's probably the solution.
Okay. So then it would actually be able to see the printer, the computer.
Yeah, because your computer now has a parallel port.
Okay. But it would be actually physically a USB connection, though.
No, not in this case. In this case, it would be the same exact connection you're using now. You're adding a parallel port to your new computer.
How does that actually plug into the computer?
The computer will have a slot.
Okay.
If it's not a laptop, if it's a desktop computer, you'll be able to open up the case and for $20 buy a card that gives it parallel port.
Okay, well, then that handles it.
Yeah, I think that'll solve it. The other thing you could do is get a JetDirect interface that will give it parallel to Ethernet. Okay. And then you could do it over the network. Now, all of this, of course, the normal recommendation, we just get a new printer. But I got it. You love this printer. You don't want to give it up.
Right.
So you're going to go through a little bit more kind of heartache. But I think you could do that.
All right, I'll give it a go. And
two possibilities. Tell your computer guy this. Just write down JetDirect, HP JetDirect. That's a parallel to Ethernet interface. It puts it on the network. It takes any HP computer and puts it on the local area network. And so that means you could print to it via the network. Actually, that'd be good because every computer in your house could now print to it.
Okay.
And then the other thing would be to get a parallel port card. Boom, that you plop into your computer, and then you just connect it as you used to. It's exactly the same as the old way.
Oh, all right.
Your problem's going to be that eventually HP's not going to be writing printer drivers for Windows 8. I would check, make sure that they make them for Windows 7. And good luck to you. And yes, as somebody in the chat room said, where are you going to get the coal to keep that printer going? Jeremiah, Simi Valley, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hi, Jeremiah.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So basically, I have a internet gaming problem. I've been playing on my PS3 online for a couple years now. I used to have it hooked up through an Ethernet cable when I was in college. But now that I've moved back into my parents' house, I'm having to run it wireless, and I'm getting download speeds of barely topping 500 kilobytes. When I was internet service provider, I was getting through Ethernet, I was getting 1.5 to 2 megabytes download. So basically, my question is, without having to, you know, drill holes through the wall to run an Ethernet cable from the router, I was wondering if there's anything else that I could do.
Well, it sounds like they've got something wrong with their router. That's really slow. So you're sure on hardwire that you're getting a much better speed. They didn't downgrade their internet now that you moved out. Oh, Jeremiah's not here. We can get the cheap internet.
I'm pretty positive. I mean, that could be easily checked by bringing my PlayStation.
Yeah,
out.
I would before you spend any money, I would do that. Make sure that the wired is fast enough. If the wired is fast enough, then I think a better router. There's something wrong with the router. It shouldn't be that slow. Unless you're so far from it that, you know, one of the problems with Wi-Fi is if you don't get a strong signal, it does lower the speed.
Yeah, I'm getting like 88%, so it's not too
low. Oh, that's good. Now, that should be fine. The other problem with Wi-Fi, and this has happened probably since you went away to school and came back, is that it's gotten very crowded. Your neighbors probably didn't have Wi-Fi when you left. They do now, I could promise you. You probably have, you know, a half dozen Wi-Fi access spots all within range. That means there's congestion. So I don't know. I don't think the PS3 can use 5 gigahertz. Probably can't. If it could, that would be the thing to do. That's what a lot of people are doing, is going from 2.4 gigahertz to 5 gigahertz. You should certainly be using N if you can.
Okay.
Don't use WEP. Are you using WEP?
No, I'm not.
Okay. WEP is the broken encryption standard, but also is a very slow standard. It may just be the PS3. You know, one thing to try is move the PS3 right next to the Wi-Fi router, see if it's better. I have a PS3 on Wi-Fi. It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
So, I think it's probably just a bad router. You might even just try resetting the router.
Okay. So there's no any like kind of like repeater, like an extra router that I can.
Oh yeah, you can. This is called WDS, the wireless distribution system. It allows for you to buy repeaters, but the problem is you should get one that's made by the same company that makes the router, so that they're compatible. But yeah, you could also use a repeater. That might help. Problem is, if the router is congested or slow or whatever, the repeater's just going to be just as bad.
Yeah, so it's not going to help much.
Yeah. I would really check if you've got a lot of congestion. That can be a problem. Wi-Fi's gotten a lot tougher than it used to be because everybody's got it now. Sorry to say. Some people say try power line networking. Others say no. But that's another way to do it that doesn't use wireless. Might be faster. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and Mac Break Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.